Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cinema Theology. I am Hadid Cortez, and with me is...
Josias Flores. And this is the crossroads between movies and theology. This is Cinema Theology. Welcome.
All right, great. So as we said last week, we have a special movie we're going to talk about today. And it is unlike any other we have done so far. So far we've done mainly fiction. We have done sci-fi, we've done fantasy, but today, where are we going to venture into today, Josias?
We are venturing deep into the pages of the Bible and the way that they have been expressed in movies, specifically, really a classic movie, probably most well-known for its music, and that's Prince of Egypt. And of course, that's based on the story of Moses and the deliverance of the Hebrew people out of Egypt from slavery. So, I'm just going to dive right into the synopsis, then I'm going to talk to you about some of the things that I like to do, and I'll explain, Dido. And after that, we'll talk about the movie. So, Prince of Egypt is a movie that came out, I think, early 2000s.
1998.
Thank you for that. Maybe you should do the synopsis, but I will continue. And it starts out with a young Moses as a baby being put into the Nile River by his mother for his protection, found by... It's in the movie, it seems to be Pharaoh's wife, raised as Pharaoh's son, has a brother named Ramses, who he gets in trouble with. He, along the journey, realizes he's actually a Hebrew. When he realizes that when he's older, he has a really some kind of identity crisis, kills an Egyptian who was beating another Hebrew, runs away from Egypt out of guilt, it seems like, in the movie, meets a girl who had met before, Sephora, in the desert, marries her. While he's out there living with his wife as a shepherd, God calls them through a burning bush to go back and deliver the Hebrew people, his people, from Egypt. So he returns, faces his old brother Ramses, and through a series of plagues, finally Ramses is convinced that he should let the people go. They leave, they go to the Red Sea. Ramses decides he wants the people back, attacks them. God opens up the Red Seas, they walk through. Red Sea closes in on the Egyptians, victory for the Hebrews, and they are delivered, and the movie ends. That's a pretty long synopsis, but I think that really just about covers the movie. So, Dido, we are recording this on a Saturday, which is the Sabbath that we keep as Christians, as Seventh-day Adventist Christians. And I just wanted to share that I actually miss hanging out with you on Sabbath, man, on Saturday, because Friday nights, you have an incredible tradition with your family where you guys will make this, what is it, like the challah bread or whatever it's called? It's like this Jewish woven bread. So good. You guys will bake it yourselves. You'll make this special dip, like the olive oil and balsamic vinaigrette with Italian herbs. If you haven't tried that, you should dip that in. And also, you've made sopa, this like Mexican soup that's amazing. And I am fasting right now because the conference that I work for, I work as a pastor, everyone, and the conference that I work for, they're asking the pastors to like fast on Saturdays or whatever. And I'm just thinking about that. My mouth is like super watery. So I miss hanging out with you, man.
Yeah, I miss it too, man. And also, you know, I think we would, one of our favorite pastimes, especially with other friends, we would get together and watch movies. And I think one of my favorite things that I love to do with you is when we watch bad movies and when we make fun of them.
Yes, on Saturday nights, actually. So, again, the Saturday connection. I remember watching Storks up to like, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and we're just dying laughing at everything because we were just so tired. It was great.
Yeah, the good times, good times. So, anyway, back to Prince of Egypt. So, of course, this movie is based on the first 14 chapters of the book of Exodus. And something I would like to touch upon today is the concept of biblical adaptation. Of course, this is not the actual story of Exodus. This is merely an adaptation. That means there are some things that are in the movie that they're not in the Bible, or there are some things that are in the Bible that are not portrayed in the movie. So I would like to just point out a few inaccuracies in the movie, and let's talk about how we as Christians are supposed to respond to these types of issues. What do you think about that?
I like it. I gotta say, personally, I usually have a gripe with biblical movies because I like to point out the inconsistencies, and they bother me to no end. So, having said that, I think that's part of the reason why I was reluctant to do this movie, but I'm glad that we did, and I'm glad that we could talk about it. So, share with us, what are some of the things that you do think, you know, about this movie in comparison to the Bible?
Off the bat, this is one inconsistency that you will find across a lot of the interpretations of Exodus. Moses is not raised by Pharaoh's daughter. He is actually raised by his birth mother, because Miriam was watching from the edge of the river, and when he sees that Pharaoh's daughter picks the baby up, she goes and says, "Oh, do you want me to go find a nurse for him?" And Pharaoh's daughter says, "Okay, fine, I'll pay whatever he needs to be for so he can be raised." So he's actually raised by his actual mother, Yochebed, I think that's her name. Yes. So he is raised by his actual mother for, we might say, the first 12 years of his life. And then he goes into the court of Egypt. That's one inconsistency, because in the movie, of course, he's picked up by Pharaoh's wife, as you said, and he is raised by her. And there's implied that he never knew who his actual mother was until later on in the movie. Another inconsistency, well, not an inconsistency, but something they add, and is actually my least favorite part of the movie, is the entire sequence up until when Moses kills the Egyptian. A lot of it is mainly slapstick comedy and stuff that is completely made up, such as him meeting his future wife actually months or days before in Egypt, because the Egyptians had captured her.
It just seems like a plot device. Basically, that part of the movie, it's like a plot device for the character arc that they want to give Moses, but it's not really found in the biblical story. And so it's kind of frustrating. I mean, ultimately, it serves some purpose in helping you kind of connect with Moses as a character and make the Ramses-Moses connection more meaningful. But ultimately, yeah, biblically speaking, it's not founded.
Yes, and I think part of that is because if you read the actual story of Moses in Exodus, there's not a lot of stuff written between Moses being found in the Nile and him becoming a part of the court of Egypt and before he kills the Egyptian. So I imagine that the writers of this movie needed to establish a character and a story before all this happens, because everything happens basically for Moses after he kills the Egyptian, and that's the juicy part. But there's not a lot of context before, so they tried to provide a little bit of that context. And I would say that a lot of the human drama in this movie comes because of the relationship between Moses and Ramses.
Agreed. I will say, though, one of the things I really like about this movie is the fact that before you see anything, they have a kind of disclaimer where they say it's an adaptation, it's not accurate, and we're just hoping to stick to the essence of the story. So a lot of biblical movies don't do that. A lot of biblical movies just jump right in. And so the fact that they took the time to list that out, I think it's awesome. I gotta say, they really, like, even though, yes, it's not 100% biblical, but I appreciate the kind of effort that went into making this movie. The music is spectacular. The casting is amazing. I mean, they got Sandra Bullock, and like they have Patrick Stewart. They have Jeff Goldblum, and they really, you can tell, like, they put some time into this movie, and I appreciate that.
I would also say the animation is completely gorgeous. And some yes. One of the things I noticed about this week is that everything is so large. It's like, you know, they make statues of the pharaohs the size of the Empire State Building. It's like, no way Egypt ever had this. But, you know, I think it lends the visuals to say that this story is an epic story. It's like, it's about gods, mm-hmm. It's about bigger stuff than human beings. So I think it really works for this type of story. And I really love the visuals. One of the things I was commenting when I was watching it was that a lot of the backgrounds actually look like concept art, you know, in animated movies, mm-hmm. Especially now, they'll often show you, okay, so like this is what the artist had envisioned. And these really beautiful drawings of, I don't know, of really exaggerated environments, but they perhaps don't make it into the movie, but in this movie, they're so beautiful and they're so colorful and so vibrant. And I just love the way that this movie is animated. You also mentioned the music. I think a lot of the songs are iconic. I think yeah. you can still, if you were to say, you were to sing today, "Deliver Us," people would recognize it. Or, you know, there was, it's actually the only, I think it was the only time that Whitney Houston and Mariah Carey got together to sing the original song of this movie, which is called "When You Believe."
When You Believe, yes. Yeah. I have it on my iPhone. And you got to understand, this is the first time I've watched this movie from start to finish. I've never watched this movie before this moment. I tried once before, got distracted, didn't finish it. But I had heard the movie, and I mean, the music. And I played the music even for bands and stuff. And I have music on my phone. Again, this movie was transcendent with this music, I think. And underrated animated film.
Yes, and I think that is in no small part to Hans Zimmer, who is always knocking it out of the park, even in the 90s. So, yeah, that is beautiful. And I think we missed saying something about The Prince of Egypt and what you just mentioned. Because I didn't really grow up with this movie. I know a lot of people my age grew up watching The Prince of Egypt. I remember I saw it once when I was maybe like 5 years old, and I didn't really watch it anymore after that until I was probably already in my teen. And I think I was already in college the next time I saw it. What is your experience with The Prince of Egypt?
Yeah, just other people talking about it. I grew up with another movie. It's the movie on Joseph by DreamWorks as well. I think it's that one's called Prince of Dreams, I think. And that's the one I grew up with. I never watched Prince of Egypt. So anyway, I didn't have that connection. But yeah, I knew the music.
Yeah, I think that's really saying something about the craft of this movie, how some of the music has become iconic. And even though I didn't really see it throughout my childhood, there are certain images that I can still remember. One of them is that scene with the Angel of Death when the kid goes inside with a jar and then the angel comes and you see his hand slip out the door to say that he's dead. Another image that is just like in my memory so vivid is the scene where they're going through the Red Sea and there's thunder in the background and you see the silhouette of like a whale and a couple fish, and that was just a scary visual. And I think this is a good way of describing this movie. This movie is kind of scary, and you know,
it has a dark tone. It's a darker movie.
It's a very dark tone. Because I grew up with two other versions of this story. I saw The Ten Commandments, which was made way back in the 50s with Charlton Heston. And just one of the biggest movies that has ever been made. And I grew up with another, I think it was a made-for-TV movie where Ben Kingsley is Moses. And I haven't seen the Ben Kingsley one, but I have seen The Ten Commandments. But Prince of Egypt is a lot darker and a lot scarier in some ways than those other interpretations. I think the crowning achievement of horror in this movie is the scene where he has a nightmare where he's seeing the genocide of the Hebrews told through hieroglyphics.
What do you think that means when we talk about theology? I mean, do you think the artist intentionally chose to have like these darker themes? Because I mean, you look at the set, so to speak, and inside Pharaoh's palace, it's always like dark and dimly lit. When you go outside, usually it's like darker clouds, or a lot of things happen at night. Do you think the artist deliberately chose this style of art in order to portray something about God, or do you think that's just kind of a different influence?
Honestly, I think it was made to achieve emotional catharsis, in the sense that I think one of the great animators, I think Don Bluth, said that you can basically show a child anything. You can make things as scary as you want as long as it has a happy ending. And actually, the darkness that is throughout the movie actually heightens the joy at the end of it. So I think that's the effect that they were going for.
So to like draw in the emotions.
Exactly. And that
for the big payoff.
That's how I would describe it as well. It's a very emotional movie. It's a very heavy movie in some respects, just by mentioning that they start off with a genocide, where it's implied, you know, we know that in the Bible they actually went home by home killing children. We don't see that here because it's a movie for children, but it is very heavily implied. But I don't, not only that, we have so many scenes of just the cruelty of slavery, where men and women are working, you know, pushing rocks, and the Egyptians are whipping them. They're grabbing like kids by their hair. And then that even extends to some of the other scenes, for example, like the plagues are almost a like a horrific scene. It's great, I think, but it's definitely it's heavy, especially I think for children who understand what is going on.
I'm glad in some sense that they chose to take this direction. For one, I think watching this movie helped me appreciate kind of like the depth of meaning of the story, reading it again, because I read the story right after I watched the movie. And I will say this too, it kind of helps you understand, listen, when you read this story, slavery was pretty bad. You know, like usually, sometimes when you read something so much and you just kind of see the words, you lose the meaning and kind of like the reality in some sense, because it becomes cliche or just commonplace. And I think biblical stories, that can happen too. Mm-hmm. The more we hear them, the less we think about what it really meant to live through something like that. And the thing about the Exodus story is that Jesus, in some sense, parallels Moses. I mean, when we look at Matthew, the way that he outlines the gospel story, it's a parallel to the Exodus story.
Yeah,
and definitely. And Jesus is a parallel to Moses in a lot of cases in the way that he fulfills the prophecies and such, and the kind of life that he lived and the life events. And so while Moses is liberating, as God is using Moses rather to liberate his people from the slavery in Egypt, Jesus comes to liberate the world of the slavery of sin. And we have this this parallel. And I think with this movie showing the darkness of slavery, it kind of helps us understand, hey, if we take it to the next level of saying Jesus came to deliver us the way that Moses was sent to deliver his people, it helps us understand the darkness of sin too. Like, hey, our world is not okay. Our world is really dark and a lot of things are wrong with it. Mm-hmm. And this does not have to be our reality. There is something better. And I think in that sense, making that connection, the way that the movie is portrayed is very helpful.
So we're talking about some of the virtues here, but we also know that this movie is kind of inaccurate. So one of the things I wanted to talk about is we have a lot of different interpretations of the Bible in media, whether it be I've seen a lot of novelizations of some of the stories in the Bible, like, for example, Esther or Joseph. There are certain movies like
Jonah.
Exactly. There are movies out there interpreting these stories, such as the recent Noah, or even of this story, Exodus, Gods, and Kings.
I hate that movie, by the way.
Exodus. Terrible. Exodus, Gods, and Kings, which is, I think, is had an interesting take on God, which I might bring up later. But we have so many different interpretations, and we see almost that in every one of these interpretations, there's something being taken away from the Bible. There's something's being added. So my question is to you, Josias, how do we as Christians react to this type of media? Are we to condemn it? Are we to accept it? Are we to accept it conditionally? Is there a line? What do you think about that?
That's a great question, Dido. I think we should not just completely disregard this type of portrayals. I think they can be very useful, especially when we talk about teaching people who don't have a lot of biblical literacy. It's a good way to introduce them to the Bible. However, I will say it's a double-edged sword, because what can end up happening is that people rely on this kind of media, and this, it serves as a replacement for biblical engagement, if that makes sense. So instead of reading the story for yourself, you'll just like, oh yeah, I know that story because I watched the movie about it. And so then you start adding to the biblical story ideas and details that were never there in the first place. And I find that very present, because I mean, I teach a Bible class, and I had students that as we share biblical stories, story of Noah, for example, they will bring details that were never there. And it's just like, oh, that's really interesting that you bring that up. But I can tell you got that from like the VeggieTales movie, because I watched that, because it's not anywhere in the Bible, right? Like, and so I think while it's helpful to introduce biblical stories to people, it's harmful if that's the place where they stop engaging with the Bible. And I think of a verse too, and I'm trying to find it right now. And it's just, I think Jesus said this, whoever adds to any of these words, right? And it's, I can't remember how the rest of that verse goes, but it's bringing to this idea that we should be careful when we teach other people, and Jesus says, especially one of these little ones, and we add to it or take them away from the actual stories and the I guess the underlying messages and themes of the Bible. If we take that away and strip that away, we need to be very careful because God does not look lightly on that. It's the sense that I get. And correct me if I'm wrong. And so again, I think it can be helpful, but up to a point. It's not the end. It should not be the end of our engagement with the Bible.
Yes, I agree with you completely. As you said, one of the things I really appreciate about this movie in particular is that it starts off with a disclaimer saying that this is not the actual story of Exodus, that you can find the actual story in the chapters of Exodus 1 through 14. But this, they're taking some liberties, they're adding some things, but they try to maintain the spirit of the true story. And I think that's the point here, that the filmmakers, what I get from the movie is that they're not trying to really teach, and that's not their prime goal, to teach the story. It's to just portray a good story. In the sense, they're trying to tell a story based on the actual, what is written. They're trying to get the human drama out of it. And one of the things I really appreciate about this movie compared to other characterizations of Moses, and I'm talking specifically here about the Ten Commandments, and isn't the Ten Commandments, the characterization of Moses is almost, how should I say, it's almost unattainable, if that makes any sense. In the sense that he's so great, he's so large, he's so confident that he's almost unrelatable as a character. Just by the way he talks, just, you know, the way that people talk in the 50s movies, they're so eloquent and so precise in their language and so dramatic.
The transatlantic, too, dialect.
Definitely. So there's kind of like this disconnect from reality. And what I really appreciate about Prince of Egypt, and I noticed this as I was watching it for this review, was that one of the things it does really well is that it puts you in the place of these characters. It really lets you feel the drama of what's going on. Even though it may not be completely true to the Bible, and I think it follows the Bible very closely in some aspects that it didn't need to. Even then, you can feel the drama, and it captures kind of the essence of the story. And I think that's an underrated aspect of that. In the sense, for example, the responsibility and the suffering that Moses goes through when the plagues are happening, and the fact that God has chosen him as his instrument to liberate his people. But in order for that to happen, there is some darker stuff that needs to happen, and it's not Moses' fault. It's actually, you know, depending on your interpretation, but here it's Pharaoh's fault, because Pharaoh is so stubborn that God needs to continue to convince Pharaoh through these plagues. But you see how Moses is looking upon the people whose cattle are dying, who are being infected by frogs and fleas and the fiery hail. And you see that he just has so much compassion for these people, but he's suffering along with them. And it breaks his heart to see people that he once loved now go through so much pain not because of him, but because of something that he's doing.
That's amazing. To me, that's probably one of my favorite, if not my favorite part of the whole movie, is that moment after Moses talks to Pharaoh and Pharaoh covers up his son, right? Ramses covers up his son and says, you guys can go. Instead of like Moses like being joyful and like, oh yeah, finally, like once he leaves the chamber, he just breaks down and he's just crying and he's broken. And I love that, because I love what that communicates about God, that. And I think you were talking about this earlier. It's found in Ezekiel chapter 8, I think. 18. Ezekiel 18. God does not find delight in killing people or in hurting people. Like, that's not something that comes to him and like, oh yeah, I'm glad I get to do this. No, it hurts. And it's a strange work, the Bible says, for him. And so I love that depiction that Moses too feels that pain and feels that like hurt and like, hey, this is not okay. It's not like... A lot of times, and what we see in this world is that we, in order to get up to power, we have to use violence and force, and that's like the only way. And so sometimes people kind of take pride in how much power they have, and by that they mean like how much violent and how much fear they can cause in people's lives, and that's something to be proud of. And in Moses' case, yes, some terrible things happen, but it's not something he's proud of or he takes joy in. It's very much, I wish this didn't have to happen. I don't know. maybe I'm not necessarily, I'm missing something here, and it's still in the minds of some people, it's still not an excuse or okay. But at the same time, I love that human aspect. Like, this is very painful.
I love that you bring that up, because there's, regarding the story of Moses in the Bible, there's a lot of discussion, and it's one that has to do with determinism, because in Exodus 3 verse, let me just find it here, in verse 19, when God talks to Moses through the burning bush, he says to Moses, I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and so I will strike, I will reach out and strike Egypt. And so the different interpretations of that verse have caused so much controversy, I think, because there's a group of people that say, oh, well, God is the one who goes into Pharaoh's heart and says to Pharaoh, you will say no. And then in that sense, it's God hardening Pharaoh, literally going to Pharaoh's heart and hardening it. So in a sense, God is guilty of his stubbornness.
Right. Like, Pharaoh didn't have a choice. God made that happen.
Whereas another interpretation is that God is not saying that he is physically going to go into Pharaoh's heart and he's going to tell Pharaoh to say no. He's going to influence him in that way, but simply that he knows that Pharaoh will not concede, just by the way, because he knows Pharaoh better than anybody else. He knows that when Moses comes to him saying, let my people go, he's going to say no. It'll take this much persuasion for Pharaoh to let him go. And it's interesting that God even gives Pharaoh so many opportunities to let his people go. So God has to slowly, you know, turn up the volume, so to speak. In the Prince of Egypt, God is not that impersonal, all-powerful, I am ultimate God, but he's a much more personal God. That's what I get, at least from the voice, especially in the burning bush.
Mm-hmm. I will agree with that to a point. I think they could have done a better job of making God more personal. They definitely portray him a little bit impersonal, I think, because it's the burning bush idea. It's just this light. And then when the angel of death comes and kills the firstborn children, it's just like this life force that just kind of like flows through. And you never really have, other than that, a lot of conversation about God in the movie. And so it does seem like he's a little bit distant to me. But I to your point, they still do a lot better job than a lot of other movies in portraying a personal God. So I don't think it's perfect, but I think it's not as bad as others have been. I just want to say a little thing here. I just want to clarify, just a little parenthesis. The verse that I was talking about is actually found in Revelation. Revelation 22:18-19, that says, if anyone adds to these things, the words of this book, God will add to on him the plagues that have been written in this book. Interesting, there's plagues, mm-hmm. that parallel mm-hmm. to Exodus. And then Jesus in Matthew 18:6 says, if anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to stumble, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and be drowned in the depths of the sea. So I kind of combined both of those things. Just wanted to clarify and point those references out.
Great. Yes. What I meant when I said that it makes God personal in the sense that he's not monotone voice being.
Got it.
He actually has like a personality, because we see when he talks with Moses, he is affirmative, and at some point he gets like mad at Moses. But mm-hmm. then you'll see the comforting side of God, which I think is interesting, and it's, I think, a little bit more advanced than other interpretations of God, where God is just like, thou shalt not do this.
Yes.
You shall go to Egypt.
Yeah. Hey, can I ask a hard question? And I don't even know that I know the answer to this one, to be honest.
Yes.
But I'm very curious. There's definitely a theme of social justice in this movie, right? Mm-hmm. There's a point in the time when I think Miriam says, God will not abandon you, so you don't abandon us. And then Moses later says, no kingdom should be made on the backs of slaves. And so it's this idea that, like, as Moses grows as a person and realizes his true identity, he then eventually gets his call to go back and right these wrongs going on to his people in society. And in the movie we see, and in the Bible we see, that, like, God sends the plagues in order to, first of all, prove that he is he's more powerful than the gods of the Egyptians, right? Mm-hmm. And each plague kind of parallels a different Egyptian god, and how God is more powerful than them. And then at the same time, it's like, okay, this is what needs to be done in order to accomplish my goal of bringing justice and bringing my people out of Egypt. Now, my question is, how do, like, as Christians, what, like, and we see social injustices in society, what is allowed for us, or what is it that we should do in order to right these wrongs, so to speak? So we see God bringing plagues and down on Egypt to eventually cause the release of his people. As Christians today, let's say we see injustice in the world and we, you know, the suffering that's happening. Let's say it's sex trafficking, for example. Like, what is okay to do in order to stop these wrongs? And I think of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, right? Like, living in the midst of Nazi Germany. And he sees what's going on, and he feels like, in order to stop this evil, we need to stop Hitler. And he's actually an active part of some assassination attempts on Hitler's life, even though he's a Christian. So, like, what is okay for Christians to do in the face of evil? I guess is my question.
I forget what this is. This is in the Bible, but there's one place where it says, if you see evil being done and do not stand up against it, then you are kind of you're not responsible. You are a participant in that. Did you allow things to happen? And actually, I think social justice is one thing that God cares about very much. Because if you look, especially in the writings of Isaiah, Ezekiel, the minor prophets, the one theme is that Israel, they're not taking proper care of the less fortunate, their slaves, their the widows, the children, the poor.
Right.
So I think social justice is something that we as Christians should be willing to stand up for. I don't think, as Christians, it is our opportunity, it is our responsibility to fight violence with violence, but certainly we should call out injustice and evil for what it is.
Okay. Yeah.
And if we see it happening in our own communities, in our own churches, we ought to stand up against that.
That's a deep thought. So maybe we're not called to be Moseses in the sense that we are going to be God's tool to deliver a people group, but maybe if we're just like the slave, right, we could do something in order to alleviate the person next to us who's also suffering. So we might not be the deliverer, but we could be the, like, just the Miriam, right? That just kind of, in the movie, she just spoke into Moses' life a little bit and just encouraged him and, you know, try to help out those around her. And that made a big impact. So maybe it's just our role is... It's to bring a little bit of justice in our immediate circles, even if we can't affect it on like a global scale.
Yes, exactly.
And that's so fascinating because that happens in the story as well, where, I mean, when you read the biblical narrative in Exodus chapter 3, you find Moses when God asks him, hey, I want you to go back to Egypt. He says, I can't do this. He asks a number of questions. One of them, like, who am I? And then God is like, I'm going to be with you. Don't worry. So like, your identity is found in me. The second one is like, who are you? And it's like, okay, I am the I am. And then finally, it's like, okay, why are they going to believe me? And God says, hey, hold out your hand. What do you have in your hand? Well, I have the staff. Okay, throw it down. That thing turns to a snake. And so God is saying, you think you don't have the tools necessary, but what you already have, you know, your role as shepherd and the tool that you have as a staff, I can use that in this journey. And the staff really is a big part of it. So it's like God is saying to us, hey, I don't need you to, right, you're a plumber. I don't need you to be like a rocket scientist in order for me to use you. I can use your plumbing ability to create and do something amazing in your space, right? Like either you're a pastor and you're a musician, right? You may not be, right, like the next Bill Gates, but you can do with what you have. God can use that to bring... light in someone else's life. It's a powerful thought.
Definitely. And taking it back to Prince of Egypt, that's one of the things I like about the characterization of Moses, particularly. Because in other versions, Moses is very confident. He's so, you know, he's so eloquent.
Charlton Heston.
In this version, he's... yeah, Charlton Heston, exactly. In this version, you can see he's kind of like the everyman.
Yeah.
We kind of see ourselves in him. Then how he's not as confident in the sense that he actually seems to like wrestle with some of these issues with what's going on, the same way that you and I would probably.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, the movie portrays him. He's not the center of attention. Ramses is because he's the next pharaoh. He's just kind of along for the ride, and he's just having fun with it. And then he's not good at talking to girls, right? With the whole interaction with Sephora, like he doesn't understand that. And then he. Even though he tries to help when he goes to the well, he ends up you know, in the well, because he's awkward and like kind of, you know. And so it's interesting because he's not portrayed as this really smooth, everyone looks up to him, and just kind of like a random dude who just by circumstances ended up in Egypt, in the Egyptian court. And then eventually he tries to find himself like a lot of us would, and he's kind of awkward in the process, doesn't see himself too highly. I agree. I like that, man. And I agree. The movie does a good job of that. And I think, honestly, that is, to me, the biggest thing that we should be focused on in this movie. And it ties into something you just said. It's the fact that it's God who's doing the delivering, not Moses, right? Mm-hmm. And in our lives, it's God, the one who has the power, not us, who has righteousness, who is righteous, not us. A lot of people think, like, it's my job for me to deliver myself from my problems. And that's not the biblical idea. The biblical idea is that God is the one who does that. And God is the one who is, through Jesus, is pure and perfect and sinless. And in connection with Jesus, and by believing in his perfect witness, basically, that's when we're justified. So it's not about us and what we can do. It's really about God. And exactly. I love something in the movie. I think it's in one of the songs. This look at life through heaven's eyes. And I think once we begin to look at our reality and our lives through God's lenses, it's not our story, it's his story, and we're just a part of a bigger story. That begins to completely shape and kind of take a load off our shoulders too. That like, hey, you don't have to figure it all out by yourself, you know? God is the one who's going to take care of you. And yes, you're going to stumble and fall and put your foot in your mouth a lot of times, but he's the one who's going to make sure that you need to get to, and you will get to where you need to be.
One of the concepts is that God knows where he wants us to end up. And we know where we want to end up, but God is the only one who knows the way to get there. So we can try to get there on our own, but we will, since we do not know the way, it's impossible for us to get there. So our responsibility is to tell God, God, take my life, lead me where you want me to be.
I think this is a great spot to end the conversation, to be honest. This is perfect. And so, listen, first of all, I just want to parenthesis here. You said something about the way, and just reminded me of Mandalorian. This is the way. Anyway, shout out to Mandalorian. It's a great series. But on all seriousness, and putting that joke aside, I think once we take this aspect of the movie, to look at life through heaven's eyes and apply in our lives, again, transformed. And instead of focusing on your own journey, focus on God and his journey for you and who he is. You're on the right track. You'll be okay. All right, Dilo. Do you have any final words?
Yeah, last comment. Just to not judge the movie, but kind of what my thoughts on the movie and Christianity. I would say that this movie is a really good movie, and in terms of biblical movies, I think it's good. Just that, as I said, the movie itself admits that not everything in it is accurate to scripture. And just like the movie does, I would encourage everybody to actually go to Exodus 1 through 14 and read the story for yourself.
Yep.
And if you can do it before watching this movie, that's even better.
Or while you're watching, or right after you watch it. I mean, just make sure you understand what's biblical, what's not. And let the movie kind of bring you in emotionally to the story, but don't let it dictate what actually happened in the story. Exactly.
And I think that's part of the reason why you and I are here. We're here to separate, okay, what are the good things that we can take away from Star Wars or Interstellar or Prince of Egypt? What are the good things, and what are the things that we can leave aside? What are we to focus on when we watch this media?
Yeah, beautiful. You have to have that analytical mind when you interact with media. Anyway, if you agree with us or disagree with us, or just like, hey man, I want to hear more about this, or I want to see this movie or talked about or whatever, reach out to us. Either personally, you can find Hadid Cortez on Facebook. I think Dido Cortez is his name. My name is Josias Flores. You can also reach out to us on Facebook at Cinema Theology. That's our page. So Facebook, I think it's /Cinema Theology, all one word, no space. On Twitter, we're at CinemaTheo, and you can even shoot us an email. Good old emails, cinematheology@gmail.com.
All right, guys. Well, that has been today's episode. We'll see you next time.